And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, how you be here on this Wednesday? Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we are back in studio at One Bills Drive today because today the team had a closed walkthrough. There was no media availability for us to provide you coverage of. So we headed back down the thruway and we're back here in our friendly confines at One Bills Drive bringing you today's show. Steve headed back after practice and the show yesterday. I stayed over and then drove back this morning as, you know, the decision was made that it would be closed with no media availability early Tuesday evening, I think. And by that time, I had kind of committed to just staying put. And then I just...
you had begun the
spiral. I had a little bit longer commute this morning, shall we say. But it's all good. Got here plenty of time. Lee. You rolled out of bed, drove 10 minutes, and you were here.
Boom diggity. we I got that vibe where you start hearing like, yeah, they're going to cancel practice tomorrow or whatever. Yet today was supposed to be a day that was not open to the public. So if they were going to...
Yeah, practice, though.
Practice. Practice was not going to be open to the public. So you thought if they were going to ixnay a day of practice, it would be one of those days. They don't want to disappoint, you know, however many 5,000 people who are going to show up at practice, and all of a sudden they show up and they, you know, there's no practice. That's not a good PR look. So you knew it would happen on a day like today. And
right,
once you start hearing that smoke, it kind of gets legs. And I figured it. I'm going, yeah,
right.
I knew.
Yes,
I could feel it.
You could feel it coming.
So here we are, back in the friendly confines.
So here we are, and happy to be back, and good to see our people in the control room who have been diligently getting our remote broadcast up and running each and every day we've been out there at training camp. So good to see those peeps. And they'll be back at it tomorrow, morning practice, as usual. All these practices have been at 9:45 a.m., well attended. It is one that is open to the public. And then that's going to be followed on Friday
by the
return to Highmark Stadium for the early evening practice, 5:30 p.m. at the stadium here.
Kind of looking forward to that, right?
So we'll be up there tomorrow and right back here on Friday.
We'll be here on Friday. We'll do the show.
Yeah.
Hang out.
And then head over.
And just walk on across the parking lot.
Take it all in.
So taking it all in.
We'll be ready
for that.
I
was talking to people on the sidelines, just, you know, family and friends of the players and stuff, and we were sitting there, and everybody's, you know, there's 5,000 people watching practice. Brownie, I hate football practice. Let me just say that. After another training camp is going to prove it even further to myself. Watching these guys, half a practice, three-quarter. Now, some of that practice is really cool. You see these guys out there. You see them compete. Like, you and I were right there in the corner when these guys are making plays in the red zone and all that. A lot of it is just like, you forget, it's individual drills. You know what I mean? The guys are just like popping out of their stance, lining up, taking like three steps hard and, you know, taking choreographing.
Okay.
Bro, that is not entertainment.
There are elements of training camp practice that are less than scintillating.
So I guess I'm posturing for maybe us just doing the show from here all week, maybe, right?
Oh, you've seen enough?
I've seen enough. They're going to be here Friday anyway. We don't cover them on the weekends. We're not doing shows. We'll catch them on Monday. It'll be easy.
I think I'm going to head up tomorrow.
Jay, let's make that happen.
I don't think that's going to fly.
All right.
Yeah, it's not in your contract.
It's not my contract. I have a contract.
Yeah, that's. Okay. I was going to say the same thing.
It's cool. I mean, it has been an absolutely stellar year for weather, for the team's expectations.
The weather up there is
the fans have been off the charts. Some of the stuff we've seen, and I was on with Howard and Jeremy this morning. They asked me, you know, what's caught your eye? Is there any players? Let me tell you something. You and I have talked about it. Mm-hmm. It's like they hit on every draft pick this year.
Yeah.
Right? All of them have flashed. Right down to the punt god. He hasn't missed a hold yet on his field goals. Forget his punting. Nobody cares, obviously. They want to know if he can hold on field goals. The first four picks with Kaiir, it's a no-brainer. The guy's off the charts athletic, and he's
elite physical.
He's all that stuff. James Cook is like, he looks like he's been around for 8 years, except he's fresh.
Yeah.
Terrell Bernard is like, look at that. It's like one of those guys like, hey, who is that? Right? It's like, look at him. He's like one of those guys. And then
Khalil Shakir,
and thanks in part to Jameson Crowder being unavailable, Khalil Shakir has moved up in the depth chart, not just by the fact that Crowder wasn't there, but it's like, our opinion of him has been like, wow, look at that guy. And even Sean McDermott.
Who does not hand out bouquets, especially to rookies.
All I can say is McDermott's warming up to that guy.
Yeah.
So you could go further down the line. All these guys. Benford.
Matt Araiza was the next pick, followed by Christian Benford. And then
Benford
Luke Tenuta, the offensive lineman.
Tenuta's up against it because there's just so many guys there, right?
Veteran guys.
And there's also some other young rookies like this guy, Alec Anderson from UCLA. You and I have been.
Yeah, I like him. He's got some potential.
Yeah, he's got some potential. So they got offensive linemen that are at least to you and me. We're not talking to the coaches. Right? This is just, you know, me.
You and me spelling
but
off.
It's like they hit on all these draft picks, you know, 8 days into training camp. But. And even after the pads have come on, not too much has changed.
The early returns are promising.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Oh, I'm all about it.
To me, that's been the best part about training camp because, you know, like I said, it's zero fun for me. But it's really been the best part about it. You see these guys like, wow, they you know, and you go down the list of like we just did. It's pretty amazing because most of these, once in a while, it's like, I picked that guy.
Right, and the task now, more so, I would say, for the college scouting department and Brandon Bean, with a roster as advanced in its formation and development, you're just trying to find fits. It's not like you're firing a shotgun and whatever we can get our hands on, let's take it. I don't want to say the scope narrows because, again, best on the board philosophy. But even so, I get the sense that there are certain fits that they are looking for in particular with some of these people that they drafted. And
right.
I mean, it's no accident that, you know, James Cook was selected. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, but I'll say this, too. It's, you know, all these guys we just mentioned may get cut. How do we know?
Well, I
doubt that they're going to cut Kaiir Elam or James Cook.
Yeah.
You know, but it is rare for me, from my perspective and from my memory, which may or may not be broken, I've rarely seen that many draft picks, all of which had some moments in training camp. Most
They've
of these
all
guys
flashed, as we
there's
said
like
yesterday.
Usually like half your draft picks are like underwhelming. To say the least.
Or need a little more time on the job to kind of, for it to click.
They're lagging in something. They're not, you know, most of these, all the guys we talked about, all of them have not only held their own, but had moments where it's like, wow, nice play.
It's been pretty impressive.
And like the kid Benford yesterday, the corner, we were like, there was like a red zone period where I was like, oh, there he is again and again. And it was pretty impressive. It's been pretty impressive for me.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot Baylen Specter.
Baylen Specter, nice same job. Thing. He's flashed.
Yep.
He's got Specter and Bernard. Specter and Bernard, to me, are very similar, even though they were picked five rounds.
I think Bernard's a little bit looser athlete.
Yes.
Specter, not quite able to cover the same amount of ground as Bernard, but Specter is a little sturdier, a little bigger frame.
A little bigger. And he also has that, you know, that special teams kind of grit about him,
right?
I think that's his ticket because where he's at linebacker, it's just too deep for him to poke his head out of that. Yeah, it'd be tough to get on the field.
But
Bernard, I could see Bernard backing up Milano and Edmonds.
Right. That's a possibility.
He's you know what I mean? He could be the first
Tyrell
guy in.
Tyrell Dotson is kind of competing with him for that, I would say. If you ask me
who else would be in that mix, I would say
Tyrell Dotson.
I would say so, too. But I would say, too, I don't know if Dotson can do both spots. You know what I'm saying? And with Bernard, if you have position flexibility.
Yeah. Dotson's pretty athletic. He's played in both spots to fill in injuries over the past couple of years.
Right.
Remember, they lost Jermaine early in the, what was that, the 19 season, I want to say, because he missed the Miami game. Dotson made his first career start. Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah, it might have been.
And then Milano missed time, and he filled in for him.
Was it 2020?
I think it was 19.
Yeah, I mean, AJ
for some reason,
I
remember people in the stands.
AJ Klein got a lot of games.
Klein wasn't here yet, and I think that's why Dotson.
Yeah, it was in 2020 when Klein came in. So yeah, you're right. It was 19.
In any event, yeah. Suffice to say, the draft class has flashed just about every one of them at some point or another. Through the first week and a half of training camp, it's very encouraging. We love to see it. It's going to be very interesting to see where it goes from here, especially when we get to preseason games starting next week. NFL news and notes. By now, most of you are aware that Jordan Poyer left yesterday's practice clutching his left arm after taking a shot to it on a play in 11-on-11 red zone drills. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, Poyer hyperextended his elbow during the practice and is going to miss, quote, a few weeks. That, according to Adam Schefter, as I said, the Bills are obviously in the league's kickoff game September 8th, but the expectation, according to Schefter, is that Poyer will be ready for that game. So it's going to miss some time here, but we're still a little over a month away from the opener, so it should be okay.
We were sitting there right where he walked off the field.
Yeah.
We were kind of within 30 feet of him, and he came off, and he was there for a couple of minutes and didn't get any – a lot of times when you get hurt, you know, you walk it off a little bit.
Yeah, and the pain subsides.
Right. This didn't seem like it was that. He stayed hurting. Now, it was reported, too, that he got carted. He didn't get carted off. He walked down the tunnel and walked out. Then he jumped on a cart to drive the 200 yards to the locker room. So it wasn't like he was incapacitated, but he was in some pain. And, you know, hyperextended elbow. I told you, in the soft tissue thing, sometimes – instead of ligaments, you kind of hope the darn thing's broken because it heals better.
Oh, okay.
It heals better and it heals faster. And when it come back, it's
sturdy.
It's quicker at the back end.
Unless it's a complicated break that requires a plate or something.
All that. Yeah, of course, yeah. But like you know, I broke my arm and was back on the field in 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of thing. And you could, you know, you just kind of brace it and stuff. Of course, you're taped up and you got all that stuff on it. But a bone break is sometimes much better than the soft tissue because soft tissue, you got to wait and it's a long, the blood flow to ligaments is minimal. So it takes longer to heal. And so, you know, I'm typical of a player. I'm going through all these scenarios where what would be better and what would be worse. But, a hyperextension.
And nothing was reported to be broken. It's just hyperextended. So,
yeah
hopefully all is well there on
that
front.
You know,
more reps for the other safeties because Micah Hyde, as of yesterday, was still not back doing team segments of practice yet.
But he was in full pads, full shoulder pads, had his helmet. He was out there participating in some of that stuff. But, yeah, just between us, who cares?
They don't need to play until the regular season. They know what they're doing.
You know, that's good.
Some special birthday wishes to pass along, some to people that we want to wish a happy birthday, others maybe not so much. Happy 97th birthday to Bills Hall of Fame coach Marv Levy, who was born on this day, August 3rd, in 1925. Marv, who we consider an American treasure, inches closer to the century mark. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I emailed him happy birthday wishes this morning. He's one of the all-time favorite guys. You know, and I know I speak for a lot of players that, you know, you feel better for having been coached by him. Taught us a lot. He's one of the great coach. He's certainly one of, if not the best coach in Bills history at this point. Certainly the winningest. And he's an icon not only here in Buffalo but in Chicago. I spent a little bit of time with him in Chicago, and everybody loves him. just like they do here in Buffalo. They just love him.
It's like the mayor.
Yeah. He's not even the mayor. He's your favorite uncle.
Oh, okay.
That you don't see often enough. You know what I mean?
I got you.
He's just one of those. Every time you see him, it's great. And Howard and Jeremy asked me this morning, what's your favorite Marv story? I go, every time. The last time I've seen him is always my favorite story. He's just the best. He gets better all the time. So happy birthday to Marv. I know his wife, Fran, is probably giving him a special day. They're going to go out and do something. But
yeah,
it's great. It's great to see him last year in the preseason and wish him a happy 97th birthday.
Amazing. It is also the birthday for one Tom Brady. Turns 45 today. Born on this date in 1977, yippee-ki-yo. I guess we can celebrate from this perspective. Every birthday he celebrates is one closer to retirement. He could get out of the league yesterday, and I'd be overjoyed. 45 years old, Tom Brady, he of the avocado toast
what
and coconut
you,
water.
And he's getting hammered today, and somebody tweeted out that he was involved in all three of the first-round docking of
that is right.
Picks. The Patriots lost two first-rounders while he was there. One be Spygate, the
Spygate,
other is
Deflategate.
And now this one for the Dolphins, tampering.
Tampering.
He's getting hammered for not getting any punishment for this when, in actuality.
Well, he did get punished for Deflategate.
No, for this one, I mean, for the tampering. I don't have a problem with his actions in this. He picked up the phone and they were calling. They called him directly, I guess, and they called his agent.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with this because here's what happens. If he's on a team, if my teammate gets a call from the ownership of another team about demanding a trade and coming over and playing for all of that stuff or whatever it was that conversation took place, if I'm him, I don't share that with anybody because that's nothing. That's going to sabotage my team's season. Particularly a guy like Brady.
How does it sabotage? The fact that another
Are you
team
kidding?
Is trying to get him?
His teammate, he's talking to other teams about, and they're trying to get him. You couldn't talk about anything else for the entire rest of the season, including any game plan that you were getting ready to implement. You had nothing else to talk about.
I don't know.
That's the biggest possible job of sabotage ever invented. You know what we can do? Here's what we do. Let's call the best player in the league and offer him a part of our ownership to come over and play for us, and let's see what happens to their team when they find that out. It's almost outright sabotage if that got out, and Brady knew it.
I think it brings an enormous amount of public pressure on the team making the phone call.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think it does anything. When they start peppering him with questions, what does he say? Well, I didn't make the phone call. I didn't know who it was from. I just picked it up. I have a lot of friends in South Florida.
Yeah,
I saw a 954 area code, and I thought it was one of my buds. Maybe he has a new phone or whatever. I had no idea it was them. As soon as I heard what was going on, I hung up the phone. And then my agent called me the next day and said he got a similar phone call. I was troubled by it. I reported it to my team. I reported it to the league. Done deal, Lucille. It's all over. He didn't have to answer another question. Everybody racing down to South Florida to talk to the owner, the GM, the head coach. What are you guys doing?
You're right. That would happen to Miami. But you think that would actually be the last they hear of it in Tampa? Or, I mean, sorry, it would have
Tampa
been
or
in
New England.
New England? You think it's the last time they hear about that New England?
I wouldn't say it's the last time. They'd probably ask for Tom's opinion on it. Were you flattered? What did you think?
Tom's opinion. Just Julian Edelman's opinion. Gronk's opinion. Yeah. Ninkovich's opinion.
I think we know how they're coached with the media. We're on to Cincinnati. I mean, they're not going to. And I think after 2 weeks, they'll just give up asking him about it. I really think it would linger far more for the offenders, which in this case were the Dolphins. So, I don't know. We'll agree to disagree.
But here's the thing. I agree. I get you. And immediately, you're thinking, I wouldn't even know. I'm like, is that right? Are they calling me for that?
Can they do that?
Can they do, right? Can they do that? Well, and your agent, Don Yee, right?
No, they can't do
that. They can't do that. Tom, being the guy that always follows the rules, which is laughable, he's just not going to do it.
See, now, if you want to talk about somebody sitting on it, the agent has incentive to sit on it because if you blow that team in, who you may or may not have clients for now or in the future,
right?
You know, good luck there, all agents at one point or another probably were talking to people before certain deadlines started or free agency opened or even the negotiating period started. They've all bent the rules. Any agent in the NFL has probably bent the rules in some way, shape, or form.
Agents, forget the agents. How about the owners over the last 6 months
watched? That's a whole other story.
Right. Yes. So the agents are like, forget it. If he's doing it, I'm not the one who's heads on the chopping block.
And I would surmise if Tom sat on it, he was advised to sit on it by his agent.
There's nothing that says the agents or any of these people that don't work for the NFL have to monitor or police the rules for the club, for the teams.
One other birthday today besides Tom Brady and Marv Levy, born on this day in 1999, turning 23 today, Jets quarterback Zach Wilson. So another quarterback with a birthday in the NFL. Some other notes: there is no clear timetable for Patriots running back James White's return from hip surgery. As we know, he missed most of last season with that injury. White may begin the season on reserve PUP, which would force him to miss the first 4 weeks of the season. Sorry, not reserve PUP, active PUP. I don't know if the designation changes there, but it would force him to miss the first 4 weeks of the season. They have time to evaluate his situation, so they're going to be patient with it. But his absence, at least according to the reporters out there at training camp, has opened up the door for free agent signee Ty Montgomery, who may play that pass-catching role in the Patriots' offense. Apparently, he's done a nice job lining up in a number of roles as a receiver out of the backfield. As we know, he has a receiver background, then moved to running back with a couple other clubs. So the Patriots have him there, and he's doing a nice job. Don't know if you saw this, Steve, but former Bills backup quarterback Mitchell Trubisky having a little bit of trouble at Steelers camp in terms of his consistency. According to one report from The Athletic, he is struggling in one particular drill that they run quite often down there in Pittsburgh. It involves the offense and the defense facing off from the 2-yard line. And a quarterback gets 7 consecutive throws to make from the 2-yard line. His streak right now, he was 0-for-16 in the drill. And through all of camp, he is 3-for-20 in the drill. He's apparently also struggled in other areas. He went 0-for-4 with an interception during a team period on Tuesday, had back-to-back overthrows. The general consensus there is Trubisky still appears well ahead of rookie Kenny Pickett on the depth chart, but it could be a rough start to the season if Trubisky doesn't clean things up in the preseason games. The other interesting note there is Mason Rudolph, who's been the forgotten man in the whole dang thing. He told the media earlier this week that he expects to get some first-team reps eventually. So, suffice to say, Trubisky does not have a stranglehold on the starting job there.
Yeah, I've said it before. I got some faith in him. From what I heard about him,
get it too.
I think he's going to be the guy on opening day, and I think he's going to outperform these expectations no matter what. So he's struggling early in camp. Okay.
We all know the day-to-day garners a lot more attention this time of year than it does in the regular season.
Especially in a quarterback competition,
quote-unquote. So hopefully he does better in the coming days. Then there's this, Steve, from Washington. Wide receiver Curtis Samuel, who signed with the club as a free agent last offseason he signed as a free agent. So this is his second season with the Commanders now. He was limited to 5 games last year due to injury. And now, the start of this year's training camp, He is not inspiring a whole much of whole lot of confidence. He was working on a field off to the side earlier this week, and that was being done because there was some concern, according to Coach Rivera, as to his overall football conditioning and shape. After reporting to camp, Samuel's hamstrings and lower back were very tight, and they believe it is due to the fact that he did not come into camp in top shape. Like the kind of soreness and tightness he was developing, according to their strength and conditioning staff, athletic training staff, was due more to a lack of fitness than it was, you know, just soft tissue injury, rigors of the game stuff.
Right.
And there were times where he had to pull himself out of team drills. So I don't know if it's because he was winded or because he felt he was going to pull something, but that's a little troubling.
Yeah.
That's.
I think that's maybe giving money to the wrong guy. Maybe a guy has checked out. He signed the big deal and sat down and put it in, took it out of gear. There's no excuse for not showing up in shape. None. And if that's the case, yeah, you're on the hook because that's a dead giveaway.
I just don't understand why you – I mean, first of all, you're a professional athlete. You're getting paid oodles of money. And coming in shape.
I don't know.
Like, I got to believe that a professional athlete knows how much harder they make their job if they don't come to training camp in shape. Like, do you know the hill you got to climb, even with a talented guy like Curtis Samuel? Like, why do they do that to themselves? Do you have any explanation for that?
No, you can project anything you want onto these guys, and you know none of it'll be 100% right because they each have their own problems, their own challenges, and life's hard for them in different ways. It's hard for us, but you can make generalizations about it. The guy showed up out of shape. He's got a lot of money, and they paid it to him, and whatever's guaranteed. I don't know the terms of his contract. I don't have it in front of me, but he's also playing for one of the most notoriously toxic work environments in the National Football League, despite what you hear about what's going on in Deshaun Watson in Cleveland, but what's going on in Miami, all the stuff the horror stories we hear about the way it was in Jacksonville last year and Urban Meyer, all that. Washington blows them all away. And it's hard, and some guys find it really difficult to invest, even if it means their own career, to invest the sacrifice physically, the discomfort of training, certainly the risk of playing hard and in practice and doing all that stuff. They find it almost impossible to invest 100% into that stuff when they're doing it for something for a team that they don't respect.
Yeah.
There could be a little of that, not only in this guy, but all the entire roster. And that's what Ron Rivera is working against. He's trying to, you know, be the guy that makes it worth it for these players. It's a big job. It's a huge job. We've seen Sean McDermott do it here, but he gets a lot of help.
Right.
And I've said it time and time again, Brownie, that this game is different than most other sports in that the physical sacrifice and the pain and the discomfort of actually even playing the sport is a big deterrent to investing all the time, all the time, because it just wears you out, and it hurts too bad, and it's just too enticing to shut it off. And that's what you run into when the guy signs a big contract. It's just too enticing to say, man, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. That's why I retired. That's why everybody retires. That's why everybody retires.
Yeah.
A lot of guys get kicked out before they're to that point. But when you see a guy retire, I just can't do it. I can't do it. And that's the reason. You gotta hurt just to get ready to play, to train. And you get these guys coming in out of shape. What is waiting for them in that locker room and in that field and this season coming up is not worth it.
Which I think the regular Joe is fine hard to believe, but
sure, yeah. I get it. It certainly,
yeah.
And
Especially when you're if you're blessed with that kind of.
But ability. you've seen it.
Yeah, we've seen it.
You've seen it a thousand times.
Oh, yeah, and it'll keep happening.
I say a thousand times. You've seen it so often. It's real.
And it'll keep
it's
happening.
Real.
That is NFL news and notes. Want to have some fun with you today here on the show, though. Since it is autograph season at training camp, we wanted to ask you, what is the craziest autograph scene you have ever witnessed? Surely, if you've been out to Bills training camp, you've witnessed the Pied Piper entourage-like situation that kind of follows Josh Allen around training camp after practice is over.
Yeah, picture the Pope dressed as Elvis.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Josh is. You know, like the Pied Piper's good. I mean, it is.
And we've seen others over the years, and I'm sure that Steve has his shares of autograph stories that we'll get into a little bit later on in the show. But we want to know from you the craziest autograph scene you've ever witnessed, maybe some crazy request that you saw honored over the, and it doesn't just have to be sports. It could be like at a concert somewhere, somebody backstage, whatever. We're taking any and all comers in this area, and we want some of the wildest stories you've got. Craziest autograph scene you have ever witnessed. Let us know what it is at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Steve and I back with more. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Having a little bit of fun with you on what amounts to an off day from training camp. It is autograph season for those of you going to training camp seeking to get some autographs, especially for the kiddos out there at St. John Fisher University. What is the craziest autograph scene you have ever witnessed? That is the question. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And we go to the phones here, and leading us off today is Casey on a cell. What do you have for us, Casey? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys, thank you. First of all, Steve Tasker, you should be in the Hall of Fame. You are an awesome player, my personal opinion. Craziest autograph scene I ever saw was at a national scouting event. They, great service group. They elect youth officers every year from around the United States. And hundreds of people would line up to have these youth officers sign a memento for them. They're all into service. They're all into dedication. But, boy, when you see one 18-year-old young man or woman in front and there is a line of 600 to 1,000 people waiting for their autograph, and they range in age from, you know, 13-year-old kids all the way up to, you know, 70-year-old men and women, you're like, wow, this is crazy. So it's intense. Good group of people, but they're awfully intense.
Wow.
Wow.
I was unaware of that. Were you?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, that's interesting, Casey.
That's, wow, thanks.
Thanks for the call. We move along. We go to TJ. What do you got for us, TJ?
Yes. The year we drafted Willis McGahee, he did a signing at the Galleria Mall. And it wasn't that big of a like crowd or anything, but it was intense in one way because my cousin decided to print out a picture of the national championship game, the exact moment when Willis's knee was snapped, and asked him to sign it on the leg.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Willis, like, his eyes just went, like, crazy for a second. Then he just laughed, and he actually signed it. And then fast forward to years later, after he retired, he actually brought it up in a podcast, and they were laughing about it then.
I think that sounds like a crazy autograph story for Willis more than it is for your buddy there. So I give
very
him,
true, very
you got to have some stones to, hey,
yeah,
can you sign the most horrific moment in your athletic career?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And when he handed him that picture, I looked at my cousin like, dude, if he stands up and hits you, I don't know what to tell you. Like I do not have your back on this one.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah, that was exactly what I said. I was like, oh, man, why didn't I go first?
Oh, my gosh. You had to ask him to sign after?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah, wow. That is not good. Thanks for the call, TJ. I can't imagine doing that. Why would you bring up the worst moment in a player's career and ask them, hey, you want to put your John Hancock on this horrific moment in your career?
Wow.
Be great.
And I'll tell you what, that was a bad moment. You talk about.
Oh, my gosh. His knee exploded.
It's akin to the Joe Theismann, Alex Smith injuries.
Yep.
Yeah, it was bad.
Your craziest autograph scene that you've ever witnessed. Maybe it was a crazy request. Maybe it was someone acting like a jack wagon. Whatever it is, let us know. We'd like to hear it at 803-0550. We go to Dan in Pennsylvania. Let's get there. Dan, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good.
Listen, I'm going to date myself here a little, but anyway, back in the Buffalo Braves days, me and my buddy used to go to quite a bit of games at the old Odd, and we'd take the Elmwood bus. Anyway, we would always wait till after the games to get the autographs of the players. We already had all the Braves players, so Calvin Murphy was in town one night, and we waited by the locker room there, and he was late coming out, and the security guards were yelling, the dogs are coming. And we ended up getting locked in the Odd with Calvin Murphy and his wife running from the dogs that we could hear barking. We don't know. To this day, we never know if they were chained up with the security guard, but they were barking. We hit a few doors with chains on them, couldn't get out, and we finally found one. I believe it was Main Street. I can't remember the exact exit. But, yeah, we got out with the dogs on our tail with Calvin Murphy and his wife. It was a pretty wild day.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that situation for one reason and one reason only. You're probably not beating Calvin Murphy in a race, which means you're the one that's probably going to get caught by a dog if you don't find the open door.
It was definitely an experience I'll never forget.
Most importantly, though, did you get the autograph?
I did get the autograph.
Okay.
I did. But that was 50 years ago, so I don't know where it is.
All right, that's a good one, Dan. I like that. Can you imagine that?
That's
you got Calvin Murphy and his wife, you know, NBA star,
right.
Calvin Murphy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you and a buddy are trying to frantically find an open door so you don't get locked in the Odd for the night. How do they leave Calvin Murphy there? Maybe he decided he was going to hang around in town for a day or two or something after the game.
That must have been a different world back then.
Because he was playing for Houston, I think.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, he played for Houston most of his, if not all of his career.
That's
right?
Crazy. Like, how do you forget Calvin Murphy?
That was a different time because you never have these days. There's always a security guy with the guy, right?
Well, true. But I'm just thinking, like, even the bus back to the hotel or the airport, whatever. Like,
well, that happens.
You'd know if he was missing, I would like to think.
Let me just tell you this. On Marv's birthday today, we were in St. Louis playing the Rams.
Okay.
We had, like, four or five buses. You know, everybody's on. We're kind of waiting. Kind of wait a little bit. Then all of a sudden, some, you know, thumps on the bus and let's go. So we take off.
Oh, we're good to go.
Good to go. Take off. About 10 minutes down the road, all the buses pull over. A police car with lights on comes by, and out of the police car gets Marv Levy and John Butler.
You forgot the head coach and the GM?
It's a little bit of a, yeah. Nobody wanted to own up to being the guy that pounded on the side of the bus and went like this and gave him the home
nope.
run sign, let's go.
Nope.
No, it wasn't me. But we, yeah, so yeah, I can see how somebody it happens because I, you know, you think he's doing it, he thinks you're
yeah.
doing it, and you both think somebody else had took care of
wow.
it.
Wow!
And it, you know, and the place is locked up with, you know, and people are stranded inside.
That's something.
I can see that.
Let's move along. We go to Judd in Buffalo. What do you have for us, Judd?
Back, Steve, when you were playing back in the mid '90s, Teddy Marchibroda was my uncle, and at the last practice, he told myself and my daughters to go out back because that's where the cars were parked. Everybody was coming out back to get autographs. So we went out back and patiently waited for you all to finish. And the first one out was James Lofton with Andre Reed. James stopped and signed an autograph for a child and got a picture. Andre went and got in the car. James noticed that he went and got in the car, said to everybody, if you'll wait 1 minute, please, I'll be right back. Went over to the car. Not sure what he said to Andre, but Andre got out of the car, and James signed autographs, took pictures, and said, go over and get Andre's autograph also.
So James went and got Andre out of the car and told him to come sign?
Yep.
Yeah. That's good.
Andre would not sign. He was young at that time, and for whatever reason, it took a veteran like James to tell him what they had to do this right. And James stood there and signed every autograph and took every picture until everyone was satisfied.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, those are two good friends of mine, and your story probably rings true. James was a great mentor for a lot of us, and he taught us a lot more than just signing autographs for a group of fans outside the stadium. So Andre and I, and a lot of us, are indebted to James for that, and I'm indebted to Andre for a lot of things too. So
yeah,
it's good. Two of my good friends.
Let's take another one. This one from Carl on a cell. What do you have for us, Carl? You're on One Bills Live.
Good afternoon.
What you got for us, Carl?
Back in the Bickering Bills, we went to Fredonia camp, and we were getting a lot of autographs, and we were just about to give up for the day when across the field we saw Mr. Wilson with House Ballard. And I said to the boys, let's go. And we went across the field screeching like little girls, Mr. Wilson. He turned around. He was the most accommodating guy. It was unbelievable. We almost forgot to get House Ballard's autograph.
Wow. That's a good autograph. Ralph's a good autograph. Because as prominent as owners are, most of them are not accessible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, because they, you know. And even Ralph lived in Detroit
most of
the time.
But when you did, he was very approachable, though. I mean, he was and very engaging once you did
when he was around.
Him. Yes,
I got a handful of stories that you can share. He when we were going good, he would show up at practices on Thursdays of home games because he was going to come in for the game. He'd come in early and he'd come out and even his wife Mary would give him trouble. He was always in corduroys,
and a sweater.
And he would come out and he'd stand with us and watch practice. And we'd, he was just like one of the guys. We love the guy. And we had this thing called the dollar line, which is in order to film practice, when you're running plays, guys have a tendency to stand close. They listen in the huddle and then they don't move. And the guys move up, they take the snap, and the rest of the team who's watching starts to creep in and get closer and closer until they're kind of in the way sometimes. So we had this thing called the dollar line, which was like more than 10, it's like 14 yards away from the line of scrimmage. It was a straight line. It was a yard line across. And, you're the owner. Oh, you're over the line. That's a dollar. You have to find him a dollar for being over the line.
Wow.
Right? Of course, I was never one of those guys that called him on it. But still, it was a great guy. And he would come in and, he was very approachable, very approachable. I think he really enjoyed those teams.
We have to take a break here, but we do want to hear more of your crazy autograph stories that you have witnessed or been a part of yourself. So feel free to give us a call, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or hit us up on the tweet sheet if you don't have time to hang around on hold, but we're happy to take any and all comers. We'll tell you next, there are certain autograph seekers who work outside the normal confines of autograph decorum. We'll tell you the categories they fall into next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. I told you before the break, autograph seekers, most people operate in good harmony with one another. You're all trying to get the same thing. Some of you might get lucky. Some of you might be unlucky because they can't always sign for everybody in an allotted amount of time. Then there are those kinds of autograph seekers, Steve, who work outside the normal confines of autograph decorum. And we have dropped them into four specific categories. The first of which, Steve, is the guilt tripper. Okay, this is the person who yells to a player, I drove 1,200 miles to this training camp, and you're not going to sign for me? We hear that every once in a while. I'm glad we haven't heard it at Bill's training camp. So that's one, the person that tries to guilt the player or, you know, whatever, the celebrity into signing for them doesn't usually work. Second, the screamer, the person who just thinks by shouting louder, repeatedly the same thing, louder than everybody else, they will be the ones singled out by the celebrity or player and inevitably get their item signed.
To be the biggest annoyance.
Yeah.
In order to have the celebrities just.
Is that worse than the guilt tripper? Just someone who is incessantly and repeatedly loud?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's more successful. The guilt trippers, like everybody's, you know.
Yeah. You're not going to sign for my 6-year-old? What's wrong with you? Do you not care about
Depends on the guilt. You got to strike the right chord. See, that's the annoyance. You can be annoying as you want from 100 yards away or 10 feet away.
If you're loud enough.
Yes, if you're loud enough. So they're more successful. Okay. I think a higher percentage of the annoyances are.
Then there is the scammer, Steve.
Right.
This is really the sneakiest of all of the outside the confines of autograph decorum autograph seekers. My son actually witnessed this once and relayed it to me. A dude had a garbage bag full of mini helmets. He was handing one with a Sharpie marker to a kid and then another kid. And another. He had 20 kids that he had effectively mobilized with mini helmets and Sharpie markers. He'd tell them, if you get me an autograph from a player, I'll give you $5. And it worked.
Oh, yeah.
He had a garbage bag full of them. I don't like that. That rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, to me, I get it. To me, that's the most disingenuous, because, you know, it's obviously to profit off the guy's signature. Right. It's easier if, you know, I've signed one or two autographs. It's easier to sign for, and I know this too. I've signed very nice one of a kind pieces that I was like, wow, this is nice.
Yeah. So,
and then I've also signed gum wrappers.
Well, that was my next category and final category, the weird request. Sign this body part. Do you know what we've seen at training camp this year? Sign my baby.
Right.
Babies have become the soup du jour of autograph seekers.
Seems like I signed a baby or two.
Yeah, you remember, like, what is gum wrapper, though, at the top of the list of weird things you've
ever done? Well, I mean,
that's someone that probably saw you by surprise. Oh, my God, let's get an autograph from Steve. Yeah. And all they have on him is a gum wrapper.
Yeah, that's going right on the mantle, too, I'm sure. They're going to frame this gum, right? That gum wrapper is going to catch their chewed gum and go in the garbage in about 10 minutes.
Like, this is the best you can do?
It just seems like a waste, you know?
Right.
Nobody's keeping it.
Not to mention, it's got to be pretty challenging to fit an autograph on a gum wrapper.
Yeah, the most frustrating thing.
A lot of real estate.
I'll tell you what, a frustrating thing is when you're signing for somebody, they give you something and the pen, and you go, shh, and the pen doesn't work. Or it half works, or it's kind of, and you can't read it because it's. That happens a lot.
Have you ever seen the body part signing stuff? I just saw on social media this week, a kid at Broncos training camp had Russell Wilson. He asked Russell Wilson, sign my leg.
And he's going to have a tattoo.
And I'm going to have it tattooed onto my leg.
Right.
So he obliged. Can't remember what he said. Something like, he said, good luck, you know, wrote his name, let's ride, you know, 2022. And he tatted it on his leg. He went right to the tattoo parlor.
I get it. That's
commitment.
That's
a permanent commitment.
That's asking to be committed.
Or a very painful
asking.
Removal if he ever decides to take it off his leg.
If Russell flops. Like a Super Bowl. That's like a Super Bowl tap.
Championship 2022.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Boston Celtics, 2022 NBA champions.
Listen, I admire the commitment. You know, you got to admire the sellout nature of it. But, you know, it'd be easier just to put a bandage over it and wait until it actually happens and then get it tatted, you know.
Or just fill in the last number. You know, at least leave yourself a decade in which to, you know, 2-0 and then, you know, give yourself 100 years to work with.
Exactly.
And tat those other two numbers. It's all done.
Wow.
I just need two more numbers, guys. Make it happen.
But you're right. There. You can. The guilt tripper, the guy who got is the same as the annoyance, because sooner or later the annoying person turns into a guilt tripper. Because if you don't
that's
sign
what they resort
for him,
to, yeah.
Right. Because if they don't sign for him, they realize that they've been an enormous donkey. And now they're gonna make you pay for it.
Yeah.
So
we have to take a break here. We are gonna take more of your phone calls on the other side, though. Your craziest autograph scenes that you've ever witnessed, autograph stories. We're taking them all here in the spirit of training camp. It is autograph season. So we'll take more of your phone calls next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, welcome to hour number two. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Wednesday. We'll be back at training camp on Thursday, live from St. John Fisher University. Today's walkthrough was closed to the media, no media availability, so we're back in our studios at One Bills Drive. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Outkick senior NFL writer Armando Salguero. Get his thoughts on the punishments levied against the Dolphins in the wake of that investigation coming to a conclusion. Found guilty of tampering, not so much for tanking. And we'll get the 411 from Armando, who for a long time was the Dolphins columnist for the Miami Herald. Yeah. So he'll look forward to that conversation.
He'll have some unfiltered opinions about what Miami Dolphins are in for. He was the one who came on our show and said that stuff before this all came down. He said the stuff about Tom Brady being approached and offered ownership
and Sean Payton
doing all that. He said that was all 100% true.
It happened. Yeah.
And certainly that was proven to be correct.
Yeah. But in the meantime, we're talking with you about the craziest autograph scene you've ever witnessed. We've seen some pretty crazy scenes with Josh. I mean, he looks like Elvis Presley walking around a training camp with the mob scene that follows behind the fence line wherever he seems to go after practice. So we're asking you for the craziest autograph scene you've ever witnessed. So back to the phones we go, and we lead off with Steve in Rochester. What do you have for us, Steve?
Hey, Chris and Steve. We were opening a new store in Rochester. It was our second week. It was in the year 94. And Jim showed up to sign autographs. The store was completely full, and Jim signed every autograph. He stayed an extra 2 hours.
Wow.
And then he turned to me and said, would you like me to sign autographs for your employees, have them come up to your office? It's the biggest compliment I could give to anybody that Jimmy stayed that long to sign autographs for everybody in the store and plus my employees.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Extra 2 hours and then employees on top of that.
Are you saying that was Jim?
Jim, yeah. Back in 94, he said. Thanks, Steve.
Wow.
That's a good one. Quarterbacks get it, though, most of them, right? Like, they kind of know some of that
and
comes
plus
with the territory.
The coach and the GM and even ownership sometimes early in the guy's career when he starts to blossom like Josh has, they sit him down and say, listen, I know this is a pain, and but it's 2.5 weeks of training camp. We need you to go the extra mile and make us all look good.
Yeah.
And take this on. This is part of your
He's done that. I mean, he took both of his shoes off after practice and signed them and gave them to kids that didn't have anything to sign.
I'm not saying that they definitely did that with Josh. They may not have had to.
He's been pretty good for the
jump. He's been great, and he continues to be. We had him on the show, but you can tell, too. He said, I don't know if we were on the air.
No, we weren't.
He said, he goes, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot. But, he said it in such a way as to, like, he got that was part of the deal.
Yeah.
And it's a couple of weeks. It's
right.
It's because they'll break camp a week from tomorrow or a week from Friday, maybe.
Yeah.
Right before their first preseason game, and the camp will be back in Buffalo. So they got another week of this. And like today, there's no fans there. So, he gets a break from it there. So he understands it. All the players do. You can imagine Von Miller's kind of the same deal. There's a high demand for his attention as well. So these players get it. They've been around it for long enough, particularly a guy like Vaughn. And kind of got to grin and bear it.
Yeah. We go to Sue in West Seneca next. What do you have for us, Sue?
Well, I have Steve and Chris. I have a ridiculous request for an autograph.
Okay.
Back a long time ago, Robert Goulet came to Buffalo. And he was making an appearance at a store near the Broadway Market.
Robert Goulet?
Yeah, the singer.
Robert Goulet, yes.
Okay.
And my mother was down there with a friend of hers. And she was so, she loved Robert Goulet. And she was so excited. She had just bought a girdle. And she had gotten so excited when she got up to ask him for an autograph. She didn't have any paper in her purse, so she asked him to sign the girdle. And he did.
And, it, and there was no
was
strange reaction
just,
from Sir Robert?
Robert Goulet, yes. Yeah, she just bought the girdle, and she didn't have any paper, so she said, would you sign this girdle? And he did. She never wore it.
Oh, she wasn't wearing it, though.
Well, no,
she wasn't.
No, she had just purchased it.
She just bought it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I still think that might have got a strange look, though. But, yes, okay. Robert Goulet signing a girdle. I did not expect that one to come down the pike today. But thank you, Sue, for the phone call.
Wow.
That's a doozy. You know, yeah, you're not really expecting to see a Broadway singer or a, you know, popular singer who's acted a little bit showing up in Buffalo at the Broadway Market. That's just...
He was kind of a...
He was a big deal in the 60s
movie
and 70s.
Star. He was a movie star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good singer. Big voice.
Big voice.
The last time he was doing stuff, he was doing college basketball ads for ESPN.
I remember that.
You remember that?
I remember that.
Because it takes chutzpah. It takes chutzpah. Championship week on ESPN.
He was great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
He nailed that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was really good. to DJ in Hamburg we go. What do you got for us, DJ?
Yeah, go Bills and happy birthday to Marv Levy.
Yep.
Anyhow, my wife's best friend went to Vegas for a week. He went into one of the casinos, and he seen Robert Duvall. And he went up to him and said, Robert Duvall, I'm a big fan of yours. I watch all your movies. I want to know if I can get your autograph. His response was, get the effing out of here. I'm on a roll.
Wow.
What did he say?
Where was he, at the craps table?
He was on a slot machine.
Get
he
the
said,
F out of here. I'm on a roll.
Now here I'm on a roll. Isn't that great?
Wow.
That's a true story. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was. That,
I'm on a heater.
That's why I had to call you. I had to tell you
about
it.
Yeah, that's a spicy one, DJ. Well done.
Go.
Wow. I'm on a roll. Can you be on a roll on a slot machine? How can you be on a roll? Like, I mean, you could hit a few times. I get it, but.
Apparently, it's possible.
He must have been maxing the bet out for sure. Wow, Robert Duvall, not won any of that. Sheesh, actors. We go to Larry in Lockport next. What do you have for us, Larry? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi there. Back in the 1970s, we took a family trip to Boston, went to Fenway for Boston against Oakland. And after the game, somehow we got down by the Red Sox locker room, and we asked the guy out front about getting an autograph of Carl Yastrzemski, he said, no, can't do it. All of a sudden, this young boy came running out, and we asked him about it, and he says, yeah, that's my father. It was Mike Yastrzemski. So he took the picture back in the locker room, and the security inside said, you know, you guys were there, they chased him out. Well, Mike came out to us and said, go around the parking lot and meet us out at the back door. My father will autograph the picture for you.
All right.
So we went out there, and Carl and Mike both autographed the picture.
Wow. All right. That's a good one. Hey, talk about a kid doing yeoman's work there. I mean, he got the stop sign thrown up by security. It's Yaz's son. The security is serious at Fenway, man. Yaz's son.
Nice.
He gets around, pulls an end around on security, says, hey, meet us out back in the parking lot. My dad will sign for you back there. We got security, you know, gumming up the works here. Wow. Good job, Mike Yastrzemski. I'm pretty happy about that. Tap into the kid helping you out with dad or the
that.
Pro.
Listen, that's a great in because I'll do it with my if my kids give me the okay, I'll do it. You know, I mean, that's the way it is. And most people are like that.
Yeah. And, you know, he probably went in. It's like, hey, Dad, there's a kid out here. He's looking for your autograph, but security's right. saying no. What do you want to do? Tell him to meet us out in the parking lot. You know,
right.
And that's, he was the messenger. Right. So, yeah, good on Yaz for doing that. We take one more here. We go to Gary in Tonawanda. What do you got for us, Gary?
It's Gary in Grand Island.
Oh, sorry.
I grew up in Niagara Falls. In the late 60s, I think it was the 68 season, the Bisons played their home games at High Park Stadium in the Falls. And we used to go to quite a few games. And one game in particular, I was sitting in there were box seats right next to the Bison dugout. So the game was going on, and there was a first baseman named Dick Nen. In fact, his son had a good but short career in the majors as a reliever. But I said, Mr. Nen, could you sign my program? He said, sure. He says, come on in the dugout. And this is while the game is going on. So I go in the dugout. I'm at seventh heaven. Dick Nen signed my program, and he was also nice enough. He told all the other players in the dugout, hey, sign this kid's program, and they passed the program around. I got everybody's autograph. And the joy was short-lived, however, because the umpire played Killjoy at the half inning and came over and said it was against league rules for me to be there. But it's a pretty cool memory I've had for like 54 years.
Wow.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Do you still have the program?
Do you still have it?
Oh, I wish I could say I did. Lost a lot of that stuff, but the memory survives, and that's the important part.
Yeah, that's a cool one for sure.
Nice.
I like that one. It's not often you get, but sometimes, you know, the kids are the ones that have the ins, you know, because the players want to do right by the kids. And
stories like that bring back the kind of the romanticizing of baseball and what it, you know, it was for so
no
many
security
decades.
Security back then.
Right. For so many years. You have, it was the thing. It was the only thing. It was the only game in town.
Yeah.
And, you know, didn't have TV. It was like Vin Scully on the radio. That was your lifeline to sports and the team. And going to the games was an event for everybody. You know, nobody went to all the games. You went to one or two games a year, you know.
Right.
And it was a different world back then. I had a gentleman, an older guy than me, you know, talk about the romance of the game. He goes, my grandfather told me time and time again during my life, he was behind the plate when Babe Ruth called his shot.
Wow.
And he says he absolutely called his shot. He says, because his grandfather says, it ain't like it is today. It was quiet. You could hear him talking. There was no music. There was no highlights on the scoreboard. It was quiet. It was a game. You know, people would talk. He goes, he absolutely called his shot. And this guy's grandfather had told him that story. And that's how long ago it was.
Yeah, so 1932 World Series in Chicago.
So having this kid, you know, like back in the 50s, he says the Bisons are playing up in Lockport. And he goes, yeah, they come on in the dugout. And
yeah, we'll get everybody to sign that for you.
It really romanticizes the past about, you know, how unencumbered we were when everything was, you know, most of us still had this sense of wonder about the world, you know.
Yeah.
And celebrities were people that were famous, not famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were people first, even the big celebrities. And that's kind of the fun part about the distant past that we hear about so much.
Yeah. Good contribution so far. We do have to take a break here because when we come back, we'll be talking with Outkick NFL senior writer Armando Salguero. He'll be joining us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. It's summer, and Bills head coach Sean McDermott wants us all thinking about sun defense. Coach is passionate about skin cancer prevention as it runs in his family, and he takes sun protection very seriously. Most importantly, of course, is wearing sunscreen. Right now, you can stop by your local Wegmans for all your sun protection needs. Wegmans will donate $1 for every Wegmans sunscreen product sold through August 31st in their Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse stores. It's a great way to protect your family and help the fight against skin cancer and think sun defense like Bills head coach Sean McDermott. And if you are headed out to training camp tomorrow, there will be a sunscreen booth to get you completely covered and protected. So be sure to do that. It's been a lot of sunshine out there at camp so far this summer. We are awaiting the arrival of one Armando Salguero, OutKick senior NFL writer, as we talk to him about the Dolphins' penalties in the wake of their tampering investigation. Did not get penalized for tanking or alleged tanking or incentivizing tanking.
It was a he said, she said situation, while this other stuff, the tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton, that was all corroborated.
Yeah.
So
by multiple people.
Well, Sean Payton and Tom Brady and
Brady's agent.
And Brady's agent,
yeah.
Don Yee.
So there you go. So we'll catch up with Armando as soon as he hops on the line and joins us. We do want to go to the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, to get some comments there for the craziest autograph scene they've ever witnessed. Lori says, T.O.'s first day at St. John Fisher when he walked over to the stands to sign and the media deserted Dick Geron's post-practice press conference en masse to follow Owens. I still laugh about that. I do remember that, 2009. I also remember that they made a cereal for Terrell called T.O.'s, and he had to go to a local supermarket there in Rochester to hawk the cereal. It was his whole big thing. Cameras were everywhere. Bulbs were flashing. I mean, it was like, it was unbelievable. I'm just like, what the heck is going on here? 35-year-old Terrell Owens, you know.
He was, you know, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
What a force of nature he was. More of a storm than a.
Yes.
Anything else, but it was unbelievable. He was really, really good. He gets lost in all the stuff surrounding him, you know, doing sit-ups on
his
driveway.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. And he had some demons to deal with, too, no question. But what an incredible player he was. And the Bills signed him to that one-year deal, kind of out of the blue. Remember, it was kind of out of the blue. Nobody even knew really they were talking until just before, right as it happened, or really just they signed who?
Yeah.
And there was all kinds of stuff on the internet about, you know, jokes about it and all that. But it was
they gave him a key to the city.
Yeah.
He hadn't even played a game. It was nuts.
It is nuts. Oh, well.
Absolutely
fun
nuts.
Fun stuff.
It was. Time now, though, for us to welcome in senior NFL writer for OutKick.com. It is one Armando Salguero joining us. And Armando's ears had to be ringing because the last time we had him on, he was telling us and essentially corroborating what the independent arbitrator revealed to us in her decision the other day, that talking to Brady and talking to Sean Payton did in fact happen. And here we are at the conclusion of said happenstance.
Armando, you told us that was all true months ago. Before all this came out, we believed you, by the way. What? We did. And what? I mean, how does that fly in South Florida? Coming to where the guy's playing for another team and they're going to do absolutely anything to lure him away.
Yeah. South Florida was in the AFC Championship game. I think it was 1993 or four. I forget which one it was, and hasn't been in it since.
Yeah, I was in that
so,
game. Yeah.
Are you feeling where I'm going here? South Florida has not been relevant from a football perspective for a long, long, long time, gentlemen. And so would South Florida be upset that Tom Brady, the longtime bad guy with the New England Patriots, would come to the Dolphins? No, they'd love it because, by the way, he's a little bit of an upgrade. But, you know, we're not going to go there at this point. It's not going to happen. But I got to give the Dolphins credit as far as you know, doing illegal stuff because they did it as a matter of, you know, just basically habit for 3 years with Tom Brady. And then last January for a week or so with Sean Payton, not caring one iota about NFL tampering rules.
Yeah.
Right.
Do they feel differently now that they don't have a first and a third round pick coming up here in the next two drafts? I know he got fined $1.5 million. I mean, it's chump change for Stephen Ross. I mean, does this serve as an effective deterrent, or does Stephen Ross go down this road again and try to be more covert?
I don't think he would do it again. You know, Stephen Ross is not a billionaire eight times over because he's a dummy. So I'm sure that he probably understands that this is the first time offense, or at least the first time he was caught. Let's put it that way. Okay.
Right.
And, you know, eyes out for what he might do down the road. It would be very smart of him not to do it again and not to be so brazen about it. Because that's the other thing. It's just, look, I'm a reporter, right? And I knew about this. How, I mean, I'm not inside these meetings with the Miami Dolphins. They're not calling me and telling me, hey, by the way, today we tried to tamper with Tom Brady. They're not doing that. And yet I knew about it last March. So it's not exactly like it was well hidden and good cloak and dagger stuff. This is like, you know, terrible spycraft. It's terrible.
What do you think, since you knew about it, when do you think, if at all, the Patriots knew about it?
Well, you're opening up another can of worms, because the Patriots are not exactly a pristine follow every rule franchise, are they? they're not exactly a franchise known for they're known for winning a lot. I'll give them that. They win a ton, especially when Tom Brady was around. Did they have their black eyes as far as breaking the rules? Yeah, I'd say they have a couple of times.
Right.
Notably.
So, Armando, here's the thing that, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around. They pretty much come down on them hard for tampering. They did have hard and fast evidence on that. That made that decision easy. Obviously, with the tanking allegations from Brian Flores, that became a he said, he said type of thing. I'm just troubled by the fact that Stephen Ross essentially gets off on the tanking allegations by saying, I was just joking. Like, that seems awfully flimsy to me that there is no penalty of any kind for the tanking.
Which, by the way, Chris, they did. They tanked. They didn't tank in the sense of they weren't trying during the season, or they didn't coach hard, or they weren't trying to improve as a football team. They tanked in the sense that prior to the season, they decimated the roster. They stripped it down to the bare bones with players who had no NFL experience, no NFL accomplishments, taking over for players that did have NFL experience and NFL accomplishments. And they did that with the stated purpose of cleaning out the salary cap and setting themselves up for the 2020 season. The report says very clearly and outlines how Steve Ross, throughout the season, told his general manager, told the team president, told Brian Flores, it's more important that we are set up for, you know, the upcoming draft than we win games this year. And I think I said 2020 season, it was the 2019 season. So when the owner, who sets the marching orders for the entire organization, tells the leaders of the organization, hey, I don't care whether you win or lose. I care about the draft and our draft position next year. I mean, what's the message? Is the message go out and win, guys? Or is the message, if you don't win, that's fine, because it'll get us a better draft pick. I mean, you tell me. I think it says winning is not the most important thing.
Right, and so they move ahead, and now they find themselves without the ability to rebuild. And, of course, the Internet right away is saying, listen, they can't even get into the quarterback-rich draft next year because they lose their first-round pick. And now if Tua doesn't play well, they can't even draft his replacement. This is a – and from the commissioner's office, obviously they announced this the day after the Deshaun Watson suspension was announced. What's your gut feeling about whether they will appeal that suspension?
I think that the NFL will appeal that suspension. The NFL went into that hearing requesting a one-year indefinite suspension. In other words, an indefinite suspension, and then we'll revisit after 1 year. So at least 1 year. And the NFL in those hearings basically proved every prong of its case. They proved that Deshaun Watson caused the threat of harm to others. They proved that Deshaun Watson engaged in their definition of sexual assault. They proved that Deshaun Watson brought disrepute to the integrity of the NFL. Those were the three prongs of their case. The judge, or the former federal judge who was a discipline officer, said, I agree with you. You absolutely, beyond a reasonable doubt and with the preponderance of the evidence, prove those three things. But I'm limiting the scope of the sanctions to six games. And so the NFL is like, wait a second. We hit a home run on our case, yet what we asked for, we're not getting, which is a one-year suspension. I think those are grounds for an appeal.
So how delicate is an appeals process here? Because there is an element of this at work, too. You have a judge who no doubt would want to be part of future arbitrations. I mean, look, she's a retired federal judge. She's got plenty of money in the bank. But if you side too far on one side or the other, one of these two parties is not going to hire you again if another case comes up in which these two sides are opposing one another. That's number one. Number two, how hard does the NFL push Sue Robinson through the appeals process with this, knowing they certainly wanted something more than six games?
Right. The idea that the NFL would upset Judge Robinson, retired, and, you know, by appealing, I know this. There are other federal judges available if she no longer wants to be a part of it all.
Right.
What is more pressing is, does the NFL, this is the Watson case is the first one in the new fangled personal conduct policy that goes through the process that was most recently set up. So the process that most recently set up, if the NFL says, no, that process made major mistakes, we are appealing because we don't want like this result. It says it kind of diminishes the new process. It hurts the new process. It calls into question the new process. Beyond that, if the NFL appeals and somehow the appeal comes out with more punishment for Deshaun Watson, the chances of him going into court and suing the league are quite, quite high. And if that happens, all of a sudden, through the injunctive process, Deshaun Watson, the first week of the season, could be playing instead of suspended, and could be playing until the lawsuit that he brings because of this appeal is heard and adjudicated. So instead of getting a six-game suspension this year, the NFL, by appealing, could walk into Deshaun Watson plays all of 2022, and we'll see what happens in court.
How likely is that, given the fact we've heard that it is written in the CBA that if it appeals the process says it goes right back to the commissioner after this. I mean, the NFL appeals to the commissioner. And that's what the process is lined out to do. Wouldn't that absolutely negate any recourse that the union has or Deshaun Watson? Because this is what they agreed to.
Well, I mean, at the point where we're involving lawyers and Deshaun Watson has no problem hiring them, as you've seen, and the NFLPA, the Players Association, has no problem hiring them, as we've seen, at the point where lawyers are involved, anything is possible, because those guys, they're in the business of getting into the words and getting in between the words and getting under the words and making money. And they will do what they need to do exactly that on behalf of their clients, regardless of what the CBA says.
And then back to the Dolphins quickly. You know, they don't have their own first round pick. I know they still have that one from San Francisco. So they still have a one next year. They don't have a three. And they parted, how many 2023 picks did they give up in the Tyreek Hill trade? Like, how bare is the cupboard in terms of draft capital for 2023? Do you know offhand, Armando?
I believe they gave up a first. They had three first round picks
yeah.
in 2023, and now they're down to one. So that's a thing. Beyond that, they are now in the situation where they are rooting for one of two things. They are rooting that Tua Tagovailoa in his third year becomes an amazing quarterback that looks every bit as elite as the number five overall pick, which he was once upon a time. Or they're hoping that the San Francisco 49ers collapse and to the point where the team that was in the NFC Championship game last year is just terrible and in the top five picking next year. I don't think either one of those two things are likely. They're both possible, but likely, I don't see the 49ers collapsing. And so I don't see that pick that the Dolphins are getting being super high. And I don't see Tua Tagovailoa rising from a solid but not good or great NFL quarterback his first 2 years to elite in 1 year. I don't see it happening. I'm sorry. Prove it to me. Show me. So it's a tough situation for the team, no doubt.
Which of the NFC quarterbacks that have jumped ship and come over to the AFC, like Matt Ryan, Russ Wilson, most notably, which of those two guys is in the better spot? Colts seemed poised to go to the playoffs last year before they stumbled again in Jacksonville at week 17. And then, of course, Denver, who finally got a guy to take snaps who's competent. Is it too late in their window for them to make the most of it?
I don't think the window is closed or too late on the Broncos. What I think about the Broncos is that they play in the best division in the NFL. There are no gimmies, as you guys know, in the AFC West. It's everybody's good. Everybody's got a very good quarterback. Everybody's got not one, but two outstanding pass rushers on the edge. Everybody's got outstanding wide receiver talent. It's like everybody's got a good running game and a solid offensive line. Those four teams are going to beat the crap out of each other. And I'm going to be very interested to see who survives, number one, and how they do in the playoffs, whether it strengthens them or weakens them after that 17-game season, and who doesn't make it, because not all four of them are going to get in the playoffs, I don't believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Armando, thanks as always for the perspective. We appreciate it, especially this South Florida news. I know there are no Bills fans crying in their beer over the Dolphins losing draft choices. And now we have two teams in the division that don't play by the rules. So, yeah, all we need now are the Jets to do something foolish, and we'll have a clean sweep.
I don't know if you missed it, Chris, but the Jets have been doing foolish stuff since 1969. Yeah.
Foolish, true. Not illegal, but yes, foolish,
although,
absolutely.
Much to our chagrin, they seem to have nobody was criticizing the Jets draft this year. I felt like we missed a holiday.
That's the best line of this segment.
That is a good one. Armando, thanks as always. We'll catch up with you soon. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thanks, Armando.
Thank you.
All right, that's Armando Salguero joining us from Outkick, senior NFL writer. We will take a break here. When we come back, we'll see if we have time for a couple more phone calls on your craziest autograph scenes ever. And are there now clues available as to why the Cardinals wanted to include a mandatory study clause in Kyler Murray's giant contract extension? We investigate next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Kids Day returns to Highmark Stadium as the Bills host the Broncos for their preseason matchup on August 20th, presented by Fisher Price. The Fisher Price Junior tailgate kicks off at 9 a.m. in Lot 6, bigger than ever, featuring a Power Wheels track, giant inflatables, a real fire truck, games, and more. Also, a limited quantity of Bills wristbands will be given out as a gate giveaway, and special concessions available, including popcorn, ice cream, cotton candy, snow cones, root beer floats, and a kids' lunch deal featuring a hot dog, chips, and a Capri Sun. Mobile ticketing only as usual. Visit BuffaloBills.com/KidsDay for more information. Got time for one more autograph story here, Steve, and we go to John in Buffalo. What do you got for us, John?
Hey, hi, fellas. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, it was like in 1957 or 58, my dad took me to a game at the old Rack Pile. It was actually a regular season game between the New York Giants and the Chicago Cardinals at the time. I think that something was going on at one of their stadiums. Anyway, with maybe about a minute or two left in the game, they actually let the crowd go down onto the field. I went over to the Giants bench because I was a big Giants fan. They used to show the games before the Bills. They used to show the Giants game. I saw one of the players on the sideline, and I wanted his autograph. But he was preoccupied watching the game. And anyway, Alex Webster, who was their fullback, he came over and saw me. He said, "Hey, kid, come on over here. I'll give you an autograph." So he gave me an autograph. But what I find fascinating is just, I was like 7 or 8 years old at the time. Was a different atmosphere that you had. You know, you wouldn't get anywhere near the field, let alone a bench today.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my story.
Yeah, and you think about it, you look back at the old thing and the game, and it's interesting.
The game was still going on.
Right. Remember the game that they always say that this was the game that made the NFL a great TV watch was the Colts at the Giants game.
In the greatest game ever played.
Greatest game ever played. At the end of that, when the guy goes in, the crowd was right there.
Yeah, they're right on the field.
And they all ran onto the field and stormed the field. They were there already. It's like the same thing. They let the crowd.
Yeah.
Hey, come on down. The game's almost over. You guys come on down on the field. It just wasn't done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not done now, but it just, you know, wasn't a big deal back then. What a different time.
It was a different time. Thanks for all the calls, everybody. There is some numbers geek out there in cyberspace that decided to match up Call of Duty tournaments online with Kyler Murray's passer rating on the same weekends, believing there could be a correlation in the wake of the mandatory study clause in his contract. I got to tell you, the results the guy came up with, there are slight decreases in Murray's performance on weekends where there were Call of Duty tournaments, because apparently he's a nut playing this game. This is what happens when you put a clause in a contract like this and then publicize it.
But there was a significant drop-off in his one-loss record.
Yes, that is true. They went from 18-16-1 to 4-7.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
As the world turns in the Kyler Murray world.
Just be happy you got the guy you got.
That's it for us today. We'll see you back at training camp at St. John Fisher tomorrow at 1.